I'm Isaac Dover, Chief Washington Correspondent for Politico, and welcome to Off Message. Today we've got John Carl, who's also the Chief Washington Correspondent, but for ABC. We talked to him in his office at the ABC Washington Bureau, just a couple blocks from the White House. But where you're more likely to see him is in the front row of the White House briefing room. And we talked about what it's like to cover a White House and why some of these questions about access and press coverage and getting the accurate facts matter, not just to reporters and doing their jobs, but to everybody out there in the country. We also talked about the differences between covering the Obama White House and the Trump White House. I asked John what he thought the Trump White House compared to, and the only thing he could come close to saying it was when he covered the 2000 campaign on the bus, the Straight Talk Express with John McCain, told the story of being in the back of the bus one day, talking to McCain and calling it in live to the hosts at CNN, where he was working then. CNN put it on the air live, and other people who were working on the McCain campaign were at the front of the bus watching CNN, being filled in on what their candidate was doing, because they were seeing it on TV as it was happening. What is going on now, John says, is nothing really like that. That's the closest he could come. He also talked about what it's like interacting with some of these Trump aides off the record. He didn't get into any of those off-the-record conversations, but the difference that he sees in some of them when they talk about the war with the media and the cameras are on and the microphones are on, and then what they do when they're talking to reporters when the cameras are off and the microphones are off. So if you're a fan of Season 2, rate us, subscribe, and leave a written review on iTunes. You also follow me on Facebook, get me there. And if you have feedback or a guest suggestion, email me at isaac@politico.com. That's one S, two A's, isaac@politico.com. So here's John Carl, Chief Washington Correspondent for ABC News. There's nothing quite like covering Donald Trump. You've covered a lot of people. Yeah. What's the closest comparison? Is there anything?
Oh, gosh. I guess, in a way, the closest comparison was covering John McCain's presidential campaign in 2000, which was, you know, similarly chaos. You know, we did the candidate was kind of freewheeling. His own aides didn't know what he was going to be doing from time to time. I remember one time being in the back of the Straight Talk Express. And McCain was back, and there were basically two sections of the bus. He was in the back surrounded by reporters and Mike Murphy, but all of the rest of the senior staff, John Weaver, Rick Davis, his campaign manager, his chief strategist, they were all in the front, and they were watching CNN Inside Politics. They had the satellite thing on the thing. And I was in the back, and McCain said something very newsworthy. So I called in to, you know, say, put me on with Bernard Shaw, who was, you know, then the anchor. And they were watching in the front what McCain was saying in the back of the bus, like, oh, my God, what the hell's happening back there? So that would be the closest, but even that, not quite.
You spent a lot of time with Obama and covering him. And
very different,
that
by the way.
Right.
Yes, very different.
So what is that? How do those experiences stack up next to each other from a person who is sitting in the front row of the briefing room from in the mix of a lot of things walking around the West Wing? What's the difference there, or the differences that beyond, like, obviously the big ones?
Yeah, we still have to see how this will all play out. But I mean, the Obama White House was so incredibly buttoned down. You know, you didn't get surprised a lot. Frankly, in the last, you know, couple of years, I mean, you didn't get a lot of news coming out of the White House. I mean, we've had more news in the space of 2 weeks out of this White House than you had over the space of a couple months or more. You know, a typical, you know, the end of Obama. There were times of crisis and, you know, intense focus and bright spotlight. You know, the fiscal cliff. The debt ceiling, the government shutdown, where you did have, you know, chaos ensuing. And
the
you
Veterans
had,
Affairs scandal, right?
Yes.
Like, that was where a time where, to me, you saw the White House less, the Obama White House, less under control of what was going on than any other point. Right?
Yes.
They just didn't know where the attacks were coming from, essentially, where the problems were. And but that is nothing compared to how things are now.
Yeah. And I you know, I will say that one of the things that's been interesting about this White House is, for all of the talk of warfare with the press, for all the talk of you are the opposition party and you are terrible human beings and all of that. This has been, so far, a incredibly open White House in many ways, accessible. And I don't just mean that they're letting the White House pool come in and shoot photo ops of him signing various things, which is also, by the way, something we like and something that's good. I mean, it certainly serves
something
a purpose for them. But it gives us a chance to see the president in action.
Right.
And to a degree, I know it's controlled and all that, but still it's a good thing. But access to senior administration officials, I mean, it could be, you could work, you know what it's like. You work in that building and you can never see anybody besides, maybe a press secretary here and there and a couple deputy press secretaries, in the other, and they go out separate entrances. These people can avoid you, and they certainly can avoid your calls.
Yeah.
But I have found that the senior people in this White House are accessible. They're accessible on the record, and they're doing a lot of interviews. They're accessible on background, off the record. I mean, it's a much more, at least so far, open White House in that sense.
How do they compare when the microphone is not on, when the camera's not on, to what we're seeing when the cameras and the microphones are on?
It depends on who. I mean, there are. Senior people I shouldn't name because there are senior people who are very harsh when the camera's on and when it's on the record, who are quite jovial when it's off, and it's kind of like, well, we need a foil,
right?
And the press is a great foil. You've seen Sean Spicer in action from the podium. Sean is Sean's pretty much very. I mean, he is the way he is. At least in since he's taken over. I mean, he's tough. He's I worry a little bit about his health because he spends so much time angry at the podium, and he's often angry when he's not at the podium.
Right.
But he's under enormous pressure. I don't think anybody has had a harder job to do. Look at previous White House press secretaries. He's got such a difficult job.
Yeah. But other ones you're saying, like, are they, we've got a president here who is more interested in his media coverage than any other president I think we've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, I think Obama was very interested in his media coverage.
He was, but only in certain places, right?
well, he would pretend that he didn't even know what was going on those silly cable channels.
Yeah.
But I think he occasionally tuned in, but he didn't want you to think he cared.
Right. And at night he would sit and be reading a lot of articles that everybody's writing as they were saying, oh, they're just doing things. he doesn't care about all that stuff. He's not getting drawn in by
And you always knew what he really cared about by the calls you got the next day, right?
Exactly.
It was like, wait a minute, is this, hey, Dan, is this you? Or did the president see this?
But how does that shape when you've got in President Trump someone who is watching his aides when they go on TV even and evaluating that performance? How does that shape the relationship that or even the relationship they have with you or the way that they go about being on camera?
Well, they have a very important audience of one.
Yeah.
And he is watching. He's watching very carefully, and they don't want to disappoint him. And it clearly shapes the messages they're giving me, and it puts an incredible amount of pressure when you're out. You're thinking, the boss who happens to be the president of the United States of America is watching everything I'm saying right now, and critiquing, and is going to call me when I get off. You remember and it's not just staff, it's kind of everybody. Rand Paul, who, you remember the tweets about his, saying that we need a replacement for Obamacare and Trump's on board. Well, I mean, he said something, I think it was on Fox and Friends, and Trump called him as soon as he got off.
So it's a way to communicate a message, right?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Sometimes
I've heard directly over the time campaign and even since the election, of you know, I'll hear directly from him about some little thing I said on Good Morning America.
Paying very close attention to all
that. I mean, it's like, wait.
And how do those conversations go without, you know, getting you into revealing off-the-record conversations? Is Trump the same way? Does he have the same mode that he does in public toward the press?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Donald Trump's Donald Trump. It's amazing, you know? And I mean, I think you and I talked about this when he was, you know, back when he was just a candidate for the Republican nomination. But it changed a bit after the convention. But he was an incredibly accessible candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the guy that not only would you could hear from, he would call you directly from time to time, but you could get him on the phone. You could get him. You could, you know, I mean, it wasn't, you know, and I think for some, it's not quite that easy these days.
Although apparently he has the same cell phone number, right?
Well, and then, you know, I mean, it's supposedly, yeah.
Right. When the amazing thing to me was when Meryl Streep took that shot at him at the Golden Globes,
yeah.
A reporter from the New York Times, Patrick Healy, called him on a cell phone after midnight that night, and it's Trump talked to him about it.
Yeah.
So,
and
it
what's
is
great
possible.
Is you know, I've heard, and you know, you hear from senators who will call him on that phone and their numbers are coming up as, you know, blocked.
Right. Yep.
So he doesn't even know who it is and he picks up the phone.
Yeah. So dial *69 before you call the president.
Is it 6-7? I think it's
6-7.
6-7 is how you block it.
I haven't done it for a while. You, one of the first things you said on air about this presidency when he was president already was the day, so it was the Sunday, he was inaugurated on Friday, then we had Saturday, that bizarre series of events when he was at CIA headquarters talking about his inauguration crowd size, and then we had Sean Spicer in his first appearance at the White House podium yelling at the press about the crowd size. And you said, don't take the bait. We have to learn as reporters, as journalists, when to take the bait and when not. How do you, what does that mean to you? Where's that distinction?
It means that our North Star has got to be focusing on what matters mm-hmm. and what they are actually doing that will have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to, frankly, it's hard to know. And as you know, one of the great powers of the presidency is the power of the bully pulpit. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, what you are saying,
right,
you know, is what matters and can, you know, as it's been said, you can move armies, right? Right. So, but there is so much. If you look at just, so here we are, it's Thursday. Since 10 o'clock last night, there have been like six major storylines.
Right.
I mean, there's the call with Mexico, right. Read out from that. There's the call with Australia.
Right.
There's just storyline after storyline after storyline, going after Iran with a series of tweets before mm-hmm. 7 a.m., not to mention the stuff that's going on domestically. And you have to try to, you know, figure out. And look, I think
based on what?
Well, you know, going back to like the Meryl Streep example, I mean, that was pretty incredible storyline. Mm-hmm. I mean, she took a shot at him in a very
mm-hmm.
big forum, and he came back and took a. But you know what? It was all kind of like, what does it really matter? You know. Meanwhile, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that the same time he was picking Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State?
Yes.
And if you looked at some of the coverage, mm-hmm. I'm not a media critic at all, but I mean. Sometimes you wondered which story was bigger because they're both going to make the same amount of coverage, you know? And it's like, okay, actually, the person he chose for Secretary of State is going to matter more than what he tweeted about or told the New York Times about Meryl Streep or, frankly, what Meryl Streep said about him.
Right.
So that's kind of an easy example.
Trump Tower with Kanye West and everybody. There was a lot of stuff going on that day and it was just Kanye.
Yeah. And you know, it just so it's tough to but I think that he is president of the United States. He has enormous power. He's no longer a candidate.
Yeah.
And when he does stuff that actually has an impact on people's lives, that's what we have to focus on, or has an impact on America's standing in the world. That's the stuff you have to focus on. And, you know, today, the story about him going to the National Prayer Breakfast and, praying for Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah, that maybe his ratings will improve a little bit so they can be somewhat as, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of an interesting story. He's the president of the United States. He went to the prayer breakfast. But I mean, you know, let's note it and let's move on and let's look at whatever else right. he's doing.
What's your position on the word lie?
I'm not a big fan of the word lie. I'm old enough to remember when presidential candidates didn't like to use the word lie.
Right.
And when Bob Dole muttered that George H.W. Bush was, stop lying about my record, it was a big deal. So, oh my God.
It's one of these actually, so, I'm old enough to remember.
It's so quaint. It's one of those actual, I was actually old enough to remember. I think that lie is a very weighted word. I think that if a government official steps out and says something that's not true, you can say it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You can say that the facts are not correct or it contradicts the public record, or mm-hmm. you can say, but I don't want to get inside that official's head and think that official was intentionally trying to mm-hmm. mislead me and by extension the American public.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the word lie does. So I've been reluctant, and I don't want to tell you that I've never said it, because maybe you'll find one, you'll say I'm lying about it. But I honestly, I don't think I've ever said such and such is lying about me, lying to me. I mean, I had a case back in 2012 where would come pretty close to that definition, and the person kind of felt bad about it. But it was I was doing a live interview, a digital interview with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, mm-hmm. and there were reports that Gabby Giffords had come to Charlotte, and she mm-hmm. was going to be speaking at the convention. And in fact, she had been spotted at a hotel in Charlotte, so I just asked her about it,
mm-hmm.
and she told me in this live interview that no, she's not here. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, and you know,
and Debbie Wasserman Schultz is one of Gabby Giffords' friends,
and had organized it, yeah. her transport, and knew. And she later she was like, "Well, it was so secret, we were trying to keep it." So she you know, but even in that case, I was like, she was not correct,
right?
But then it's pretty clear there was a there was an intention and a reason to deceive. But no, I mean, I don't like throwing that word around lightly.
But your first question at the of the Trump White House at
yes.
the first briefing was to Sean Spicer to ask him whether he would pledge to always tell the truth.
Yes.
And that was, again, in the context of not even 48 hours of when he had showed up and done the thing about the inauguration crowds. Could you believe that you were asking that question of him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's on one hand seems like something, you know, in hindsight, maybe it's a good thing to ask at the beginning of every administration.
Right. Did you ever ask like, that at the Obama White House?
I don't think I ever asked it directly. I mean, I certainly, as you well remember, you were there for a lot of it. You know, I mean, I certainly challenged, particularly Jay Carney, mm-hmm. when I thought there were things that the White House was saying and that Jay was saying that weren't mm-hmm. true. Never used the L word ever there either. Mm-hmm. But it was, I mean, I kind of like dropped in the middle, and it was a little late for me to yeah. like saying, hey, by the way, from now on, we used to, but this was the beginning. He had, you know, Sean had used his very first appearance behind that podium for that remarkable mm-hmm. Saturday. I mean, we don't call it a briefing because there were no questions.
Right.
It was just what do you call it? Yeah. to lambast the quote media and then in the process, you know, say a few things that were factually challenged.
Right.
So I felt that it was appropriate just to kind of like mm-hmm. kind of, you know, let's just establish some ground rules here. And
Do you think that he said yes to the best? That's his yeah. the line was,
I thought
my
his
intention
was great.
Not never to lie to
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
He said something not a direct
we can
quote
make
here.
Mistakes
we can make mistakes. Yeah. Reporters make mistakes.
Yeah.
You guys have to correct them when you make them. When
totally.
We make them, we'll correct them. Do you think they've held to that standard in the time since?
I think he's tried to hold to that. I think there are still things that have, I mean, look, every there are they are drinking from a fire hose.
Mm-hmm.
Sean has an enormously difficult job. He did come into the briefing room, and April Ryan asked him a question mm-hmm. about the travel ban. Mm-hmm. And before she could get the question out, he stopped her and said, first of all, I've got to correct you. It's not a ban.
Right.
So we got to stop. And, you know, it didn't take that long for people to realize that the boss, the president of the United States, right. had actually called it a ban less than 24 hours earlier right. on Twitter. The president of the United States had also called it a ban less than 24 hours after signing it
right.
on Saturday in the Oval Office. And then we did a little further and we saw Sean himself
mm-hmm.
had called it a ban twice on camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to come out and to lecture a mm-hmm. reporter, an experienced White House reporter, mm-hmm. that she was misrepresenting something by calling it a ban. Well, wait a minute. The boss has called it a ban. Mm-hmm. You called it a ban. I mean, the underlying issue doesn't really right. matter what, you know, how you, the semantics of it, but you know, this is,
yeah.
So, you know, I think that, I certainly have heard things, but you know, I certainly heard a lot of things at the podium under previous presidents that mm-hmm. I was like, it's not quite right.
You know? Right. I mean,
we've made mistakes. I mean, right. To Sean's point, hey, you know,
yeah.
we've all made mistakes.
Politicians are not well known for always telling the complete unvarnished truth.
No, it's, you know.
So I guess the question is, for all of it and all of the gripes that White House reporters and others have about the relationship with the press, what do you think it is about, if anything, that Trump and his people have right about the Washington media, the White House press corps?
Well, I do think that there can be a groupthink that mm-hmm. that sets in. And I do think if you look at the... I really, by the way, just to be candid here, I hate the notion of the media does this and
right.
you guys and the media. I mean, we are not a blob.
Right.
We are not even a we. I mean, it's like there are vast differences.
Most of the time not talking to each other
yes,
about what we're working
yes,
on because
yes.
we're too competitive.
Yeah, we're too competitive. So we want to kill each other. I mean, we're not like... But I think that if I can, with that caveat, generalize for a minute, I think that there is a... There can be a groupthink that sets in. Many of us, not all of us, have very similar backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the same group of schools.
Mm-hmm.
Not again. I mean, there are certainly exceptions. Come from the same. You know, a lot of us came from the Northeast or the West
right.
Coast. A lot of us, were completely blindsided by the fact that Donald mm-hmm. Trump could win the presidency, probably because a lot of people that are covering probably didn't know people
right.
like who actually, you know, thought Donald Trump could
when
win.
When did you think he was going to win? When did you think it was a real possibility that he would win?
When he came down that escalator.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm just kidding.
I saw it from the very beginning.
I was not there. I thought that there was, when I saw the size of his rallies and,
mm-hmm.
and then I saw them sustain, you know, you had some of those big ones in Alabama and
mm-hmm.
Tech Dallas. And
so that's still early out.
Yeah. Right? Early out. I was like, what I thought is there is a movement here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought that when, you know, we saw somebody sustain such a lead.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, when have we ever seen somebody lead for as long as he's
right.
led? So this is like mid-fall. He's been leading for a couple of months solidly.
Right.
And, when have we ever seen somebody do that
yeah.
and lose? This is Republican nomination.
No.
And I always thought, what I thought was it would actually be harder and more improbable for him to win the Republican nomination
mm-hmm.
than if he won the Republican nomination to win the general election.
Because he was one of 17 options in the Republican field and one of two in a general?
Well, because he was not a traditional Republican.
Yeah.
Because of all the stuff that Ted Cruz eventually started throwing out on him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is somebody who would, this does not look like, this is not the profile of a Republican.
Right.
And because it was a it was a crowded field. It was mm-hmm. a field that had very well established mm-hmm. people with, you know, experience and strategic game plans, how to mm-hmm. win and all of that. And, you know, he was coming in just kind of,
yeah.
you know, I'm Donald Trump. And, but I thought that, you know, I mean, he's, first of all, Hillary Clinton, I assumed, would win the Democratic nomination. And I knew that there was a segment of the country that would not vote for her under any mm-hmm. circumstance whatsoever. And that as a general election candidate, Donald Trump, for the very reason that he was a weak, potentially Republican mm-hmm. primary candidate, could mm-hmm. appeal to non-traditional
mm-hmm.
you know, to voters that wouldn't say vote for a Ted Cruz right. in a general election, you know, because he's you know, wasn't really a Republican for right. you know.
No, in some ways, I mean, I used to cover New York politics, when Bloomberg ran and won, he ran as a Republican, mm-hmm. and that gave him a baseline of people who were supporting the Republican candidate, and then he had a whole appeal to lots of other folks.
Did a real Republican win?
Right. And, of course, $100 million that he dumped into his first campaign, that helped. I don't know what the number was of Trump, but it wasn't...
Less than Bloomberg spent to get elected mayor.
Right. But, of course, with lots of other money that was coming
yes.
in. And there is that... it was very hard for a lot of people to think about that once he got the nomination, there was... not less than a 40% chance that he was going to win, even at his worst moments. Even, you know, the night of the Access Hollywood tape, there was always a chance that he was going to win.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
People wrote it off and said there's no way.
Yeah.
I remember talking to some of the Clinton folks a week before the election, and I said, did you ever think, was there ever a point when you thought you were in trouble? And this is after the Comey letter and everything. And they said, it's been rough, but no, never... They never thought it was a real thing that Trump could win.
Yeah.
Which says something maybe about the Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
What I was asking was what it is that Trump and his people get right about the Washington Press. You were saying the similar backgrounds and the group thing.
A bit of a group think, and also I think that with him there's been a tendency to, you know, to focus on the negative and to minimize what he's accomplished. I think there's definitely something to it. I think that's to a degree why you hear so much of his talk of crowd size. And frankly, even before that, polls, because nobody really wanted to take him seriously
mm-hmm.
and, you know, give some credit for what he had actually pulled off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that it's going to be an action-packed 4 years and
or more,
maybe eight. And you know, we shouldn't be in a mode of like, oh my God, look what he's doing now. But we should like, again, this is part of like focusing on the substance.
Mm-hmm.
And there is look at what got him elected. I mean, we've had so much dysfunction,
mm-hmm.
and he is somebody who's coming in and. He is, as you know, he's a disruptor, mm-hmm. and he's going to break things, and he's going to do things that are going to have people yelling, screaming, mm-hmm. bloody murder. But there's a potential for some interesting things to happen with somebody like that.
Right,
you know?
It seems like you could make the argument that what people voted for more than anything, not for Trump, not against Clinton, not for Republican or against Democrat, was just like things are not working.
The place isn't working, so let's break up the system.
Right. And
you know,
and that's the danger for the Democrats here, right, as they try to oppose him on everything and stop him up, is that has the potential of feeding into that idea of just like, oh, right, like they're not doing anything, just like still it's the same Washington stuff,
you know, like one just example to go back to the transition period when he took the call from the president of Taiwan.
Yep.
People were like, oh my God, can you believe this? I mean, the Taiwan Relations Act and, you know, 40 years of blah, blah. It's like, well, you know what, maybe that's okay. I mean, first of all, did that one China policy, does it actually make sense?
Right.
And if we really sat down and really thought it through, I mean, it's like it's rote, Democrats and Republicans, we've done this. And what exactly have we gotten out of the Chinese on it?
Right.
How are we with our cooperation with China in terms of dealing with North Korea? How are we doing on, you know, trade and currency issues? How's it going in the South China Sea? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a little, I mean, I don't know how strategic it was. I mean, he said he just took the call. I mean, you know, I don't think
we've never gotten a clear answer on how strategic it was.
But so much of the coverage was, oh my God, this guy, look what he's doing. He's
Okay, it's World War III. Here we go. We're gonna.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not yet. I mean, but no, yeah. So I think there is a tendency to like raise the alarm over everything he does. Like, oh my God, you know, this is horrible. Let's report what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, and be tough and all that. But I mean, let's not be afraid to report when he does something that works and something accomplishes something. You know?
No, and I mean, every politician that I've ever covered complains about their bad coverage. Right, oh, you guys only cover the bad things. You never cover the good things.
Yes, the airplanes that land never get any coverage, for God's sake. Yeah.
So he's going to, it seems like part of it is going to be that he's going to have to learn to deal with that when now that he is in the government, he's the president.
Yes,
all of his people who were on the outside for a long time are now... Right. They are the establishment. Reporting at the White House means dealing with a lot of these things that that they have put in question now. Daily briefing, keeping the White House press room open, maybe moving it to another building, protective pool covering the president. As someone who's been through this... Why does that matter beyond these? I think to a lot of people seem like conventions, right?
Yes.
More traditions. Okay, everybody just wants their seats in the room.
Right? Yeah. So you have to
like things that you experiences that you had covering the White House, whether it's the Obama days, Trump days, where being there made a difference to you, made a difference in the reporting that you were able to do.
Yeah. Well, particularly, it's a particularly important when you enter a moment of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had numerous occasions where there's a moment of crisis, whether it be an attack somewhere or a domestic crisis, where I have literally gone in and talked to official A, B, or C in the West Wing, and beelined it to my camera on the North Lawn, Pebble Beach, and you know. I think that's, you know, and this is not, you're not getting people on the phone because it's chaos. You have to grab somebody and say, what is going on? What can I report? What's accurate? And in those moments of crisis, it's very important for us to be right because there are millions of people watching and so it's not just like me and trying to do my job. I think that is first and foremost. And also just to get a sense to really report on the place, I think you need the proximity. I think it's one of the things that makes us, it's one of the things that makes America great, to coin a phrase. The fact that we can be in a government building, the White House, the Pentagon, Capitol, State Department, we can have access to officials, and even if we are there and asking questions that are absolutely annoying them, we have that fundamental right.
Getting information that you wouldn't have otherwise.
And information that you would not be able to get from outside. Now, some things will change. I have found, you know, the briefing has become... I am a huge fan of the briefing. I've always thought that it's important to be able to be able to hold the administration accountable in a public forum. I think that's important.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see how Sean does, but I think that when you have a briefing where it's become where you can't even like ask a follow up question, where you're not getting called on. I mean, it's like I've witnessed like three of the last five briefings where like Reuters and AP are both not getting called on. I mean, he's ignoring my questions. That's fine. But it's like all, you know, CNN, like, you know, and I know there's a war with CNN, but, you know, these collectively, these news organizations reach tens of millions of people. And when you can't ask a follow-up question, and I mean, it's just like, what's the point of this? And then
it's a show.
You know, it becomes a show. And not a very productive one. But
I remember there were times in the Obama White House, not crisis moments, where I would be walking around the parts of the West Wing called lower press and upper press, right, where reporters can go to, but their offices, the press secretary's office, where I would run into someone like Dennis McDonough, the chief of staff for Obama's second term. And it's not like McDonough would hand me a binder full of...
he didn't do that with you?
No, maybe with you.
Yeah, that was good.
But, and sometimes the conversations were just, hey, how are you doing? And sometimes there would be some interaction about something that was going on, and either he would say something or I could see on his face something, and that informs the reporting. It gets it to be more accurate. It gets it so that when people are reading what I was producing or seeing a better picture of what was going on.
Totally. Yeah. And it, let's face it, it's useful to them. This is why I do not think they will shut down the briefing room. They will not move the press out. First of all, the president can call in, you know, a poll at a, mm-hmm. at a moment's notice, which he's done already many times. But, you know, the chief of staff or other senior officials can call reporters in to say, hey, we've got something developing. Here's what's going on.
So let's end with this. It's February 2017. Do you have any sense of what in February 2018 the Trump White House dynamic is going to be with reporters, with the media that are covering them? Or is it too much in the air?
I think it's going to be a much better relationship than you think, than most people think. I think that we'll certainly still be there in the briefing room. We'll still be in the West Wing. I think that we will have found that Trump is doing many more press conferences than Barack Obama did, maybe even than George W. Bush. And it'll be contentious. We'll still be called names. Coverage will be tough, but I think it's going to be a pretty vibrant scene.
So not the big blow up that everybody had expected.
No, I mean there will be many blow ups along the way, but I think that we will still be there, and we will those blow ups will become part of the rhythm of covering the place, and reporters will become better at our jobs because we will know that we will have to be more creative in how we report. And I think that this is a White House that is going to be covered not just from the White House. I've just told you how important it is to be there in terms of the real estate and the proximity, but you know, this is going to be an important White House to cover throughout the government and throughout the country. I mean this is going to be I think it's going to be it's one hell of a story.
All right, John Carl, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, man.